Welcome to a special local talk COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm with co-host Ann Kinzel with the Ames Progressive Alliance on Zoom. Hello, Ann. It's so wonderful we can get together like this and provide factual information to our community through this Zoom technology.
Yes, Pat. It's good to be here working at home and contributing to Local Talk COVID-19 response. We've been able to provide lots of good factual information to the community, and we look forward to continuing as this crisis evolves. Since March 17, when the Iowa governor announced a public health disaster, Iowans, like the rest of the world, have been enveloped in adaptations to a growing worldwide pandemic. Today, through the technology of Zoom, we will be joined by Eric Smith, Director of Communications for the Ames Community School District, Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Public Relations Officer, who will bring on Jason Tuttle, Chief of Police of Ames.
And in a moment, Representative Ross Wilburn from House District 46 here in Ames will be joining us. But first, the weather forecast is as yesterday's weather, amazing. It seems I always forget how wonderful spring can be in Iowa. And with a day like yesterday and today, we are back to Iowa nice officially. Highs near 60 today and a high of 66 tomorrow and Thursday. And it's just going to be time for spring bursting out all over. The grass is turning green. How is things in your world, Representative Ross Wilburn?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Things are going pretty well. I had a good weekend, got a little work done. I made some wellness calls to some of our fellow Amesians.
Did your work involve being outdoors?
That was not work.
Okay. Yeah.
those checks were done by phone, but I did hop on my bike yesterday and rode up north to Gilbert and back, so just a little bit.
So you're
and played a little guitar and a little clarinet.
Uh-huh. And how was the visits to your constituents? What are you hearing on the streets as it would be?
Well, just a reminder again, those visits were by telephone so that I could practice my physical distancing. I think people were appreciative of the phone calls. I know some of the other area legislators are doing that. Representative Beth Wessel-Crichel, I know she was doing that, and people mainly doing okay, but appreciative of that, and still some anxiety and just wanting to know what more they can do or what they can expect coming ahead.
Yeah.
Ross, how do you decide who you call?
It's a computer random program, the voting program that folks that are involved in some of the parties that they use will pull up a constituent, someone that's registered, and you make the call, and then once you're done, you click save and go to next. But you use it to check how they're doing, try and pass on any information if you can about getting assistance. But I think what we're finding is people just appreciate having the social contact, social conversations, especially some of our older Iowans.
Well, we hear a lot about passing information out to people, but are you hearing any misconceptions when you talk to people?
More so, I'm hearing frustration with people, frustrated and angry that people aren't practicing the physical distancing, the social distancing, and some confusion about whether or not you can go outdoors or not. So that's mainly what I'm hearing. That type of confusion. And then why does one store get to stay open and another doesn't?
I'm always curious about this complaining about physical distancing, because if one is home in the house or in the yard, how do we know that others aren't doing it?
That's a good question. Because if you're out, I suspect that, at least I hope part of it is someone's taking a necessary trip going to the grocery store, for example, and they look over and see people grouped together. When I was riding my bike, I did on my way out of town, passed through Ada Hayden, and in general, people were practicing social distancing. However, I did see a cluster of folks at the northern part of the park that were being together, I guess I would say.
I think it's really hard because, for example, yesterday I was walking the dog, mm-hmm. and I suppose one could describe it as a cluster went walking by. And upon closer inspection, it was clearly a family with various aged children.
Right.
So it's easy to say, well, they shouldn't be together. But if you're all living under the same roof and you're all walking together down the same street, I'm pretty sure your risk is about the same as it ever was.
Yeah, that's a good point. So we shouldn't assume, despite when we see a group. And like you said, when I would see someone that was not going to move to one side or the other, I would just pull off to the grass so that I could make sure that I kept distance from them.
It's hard because I've been going to the grocery store twice a week for ourselves and some elderly neighbors, and it's clear that some people are worried and maintain a distance from you, and it's clear that others seem to be completely oblivious. And there's really no Miss Manners posting on how to deal with this in public. How do you deal with it?
You know, I refer to it as a dance because I think it was maybe last Thursday. It was Wednesday. Thursday was when I was on. I had to go to Walgreens to pick up a medication, and you look up and you smile and you kind of do a shuffle to the side. But for some of the folks that are unaware of, we'll give the benefit of the doubt, say they're unaware of their physical distance from somebody. You just kind of have to take it upon yourself to keep yourself safe and move. And that's what this whole thing about washing your hands and washing surfaces and practicing the physical distancing. Do what you can to try and protect yourself. Control what we can control.
Now, a number of large newspapers are putting their information about COVID in front of what they call a paywall. So there are some of the large newspapers that people can go to and read articles, which I try not to do all day long because mm-hmm. I do have a job. But one of the things that I did note last night was an article in a New York paper that was talking about data that it appears on a very preliminary basis that some of these measures may be working. That the curve, the wave that we talked about last week, is stretching out a little bit. So that's good news.
That's good news. I will say that during the governor's last press conference yesterday, they didn't have one on Sunday, that they pointed out that Iowa's first peak is still 2 to 3 weeks away, which that puts it after the April 16th health emergency declaration that the governor made. So presumably as the numbers continue to rise, Iowans can expect, I would imagine, that she would put out another declaration extending it till the end of the month, probably paralleling where the president did.
Now, Ross, you're an elected representative. How do you stay in touch with your fellow representatives during this period since the legislature is basically suspended?
A couple different ways. The Democrats have we've been checking in with each other about once a week through a conference call or Zoom. We've also had some Zoom sessions, because there are candidates that are going to be running that are training sessions for them on how to campaign. I did have a phone conversation with Representative Rob Bacon, last week. So those are a couple different ways that just, you know, although the bandwidth on Zoom and Connect and all these programs seems to get tested quite a bit because Iowa State had an all staff and faculty town hall yesterday, but there were some technical difficulties, so they had to do it again, record it, and they're putting that out today available for faculty staff at Iowa State.
Well, Ross, you're an employee as well at Iowa State.
That's correct. I'm on leave right now. Mm-hmm.
Can you share any information that you learned from Iowa State at this event?
I was one of the ones who was blocked out. I couldn't get in. So,
oh, no.
So that's one of the things I have on tap today is to log on to check that out before I get to some of the other things.
Well, the university is closed to students, but it's still a huge part of the Ames community.
That's right. And an impressive number of folks at the university are working from home. That they're utilizing. There's a lot of Zoom Connect and all the other program meetings that are going on, and some trainings that at Iowa State Extension and Outreach, where I work for, they're doing quite a few trainings available online.
It's interesting. Major world events like this often accelerate change.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how this immediate move to sort of emergency online teaching affects our educational system.
That's true. And there have been, I mean, prior to this, there were some of those maybe ahead of the curve on telecourses and utilizing the video conferencing to do that. And they have to tailor their courses in a certain way so that they're getting the educational material across in a way that is useful on this platform. In fact, Westwind Education company there in Cedar Rapids, I know they have some courses on diversity inclusion, incorporating that into your teaching methodology. So I know they've got that available. But it's different doing it. I used to teach at the School of Social Work at the University of Iowa, and one of the courses that I had to teach was an online course, even, and that was back in the 2000s.
Well, we're here today with Representative Ross Wilburn from Ames, and as part of KHOI's Community Radio's COVID-19 response. And so, Ross, yes, Pat, go ahead, please.
And Representative Ross, is there any messages that you have you'd like to convey directly to the listeners this morning?
There's a few things. One, just at some moment during the day, if you could pause and reflect, in honor of the 6 Iowans total that are deceased from coronavirus. So I want to make sure that we keep folks in mind and know that the cases are going to continue to go up. Secondly, this is totally, it is somewhat coronavirus unrelated, that I just want to thank the City of Ames for waiving the fee at the composting at the resource recovery plant. And that, you know, there's no one staffing that. They're doing the social distancing, but outside, there's orange trash receptacle, composting receptacle where you can take that if you're participating in the program. And, I tweeted that out, and they said that they are permanently waiving that fee. So just want to thank them for that.
Yeah, those are the type of acknowledgments I think that are so positive during these challenging times.
If I could do a quick second one. I did send my absentee ballot request in the mail yesterday for the June 2nd primary. And so you can go to the county auditor's webpage and request that because you know, who knows how this is going to be June 2nd in terms of elections, but you can absentee ballot. You can put that request in, and they will mail you the ballot when we get into May, and you can fill it out and send it in and vote that way.
What a great idea. My thoughts are, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm kind of a born optimist. And so when I look at this, I want everyone to pause for a moment and think, we're not victims here. Most people who will get this disease will come through well.
Mm-hmm.
We need to not fear so much, and we need to look, what do we have in our power to help ourselves? The easiest thing is to wash hands. How tough is that? The second easiest thing is to stay home. And I know how hard that is for people of limited means and who worry. But at the same time, we want to be there when we come out of this and be able to be with our families and our friends. We want to lose as few of them as possible. So what looks a little tough today, let's just knuckle down and do it. Let's stay home. Let's find a way to make that work. And let's come at this the other side.
Yeah, the words to live by. Anything else, Representative Wilburn?
Again, situations are fluid. So some good news, if you are having to, if you are getting, laid off, that, you no longer have to utilize your, burn through all your vacation and sick leave. So, keep checking those, web pages, at the, coronavirusiowa.gov to look for any updates. And stay on top because the situation is fluid and decisions will continue to be rolled out from the governor.
And Ross, there's a lot of FAQs on those pages, but people can call in and speak with a representative from Workforce Development. Is that true?
That's absolutely true, but keep in mind, I know last week they had been handling about 20,000 calls a week, and so if you can find out information from some of the simple questions, that saves the airtime on the call for something that might be a little bit more complicated or unique.
Yeah. Well, we've been listening and joined by Representative Ross Wilburn, House District 46 here in Ames, and thank you so much for all that you're providing this key information to our listeners.
The least I can do.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm, you bet.
So you're listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. And
we're going to be joined. Yeah. I see Eric Smith. Uh-huh. We're going to be joined by Eric Smith, Director of Communications, Ames Community School District. Morning, Eric.
Good morning.
How are you doing on this day?
You know, I think we all wish we could be going to school today and meet in my office, but in light of that, the sun is out and it's going to be a beautiful day.
Excellent. Well, you were kind enough to join us yesterday, and I think we're going to continue on that conversation today.
Yeah.
One of the things I'd like to start off of is something that's a difficult topic for a lot of people to discuss, but it's this issue of feeding children.
Yeah.
And the Ames School District feeds children all the time.
Yep.
Not even the COVID virus, in a sense, is just sort of a big hiccup on that road. Isn't that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
But how many kids during what we call now the old normal times actually receive food assistance in the Ames School District?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I would have pulled some of those stats, but I didn't get them. But
An estimate is fine.
Sure. Probably about a third of our kids qualify for free and reduced lunch.
And how about breakfast? Are there kids who get breakfast?
Yeah, yep. We provide that at all of our buildings as well, and so those same students would qualify.
So about a third of kids. So these kids, how much – does anybody have an idea how much this food that they get at school actually makes up of their total ability to eat during a day?
I don't know that, but I can tell you that once we found out that – you know, the governor recommended closing schools, and in fact, that is what we were doing. It was one of the first conversations that we had. And in fact, before we went to spring break, you know, we partnered with the other Story County school districts, and, you know, we weren't quite at the point where, you know, we were going to make a local decision to close our schools. And one of those reasons was, you know, that's a really big and heavy decision, and particularly for students who rely on going to school for food, for breakfast and lunch every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now that we're in the new normal, how is it that these kids are getting their food? Can you describe to us a little bit about the process and how it's working out?
Yeah, absolutely. So during the summer, it's through a federal program, but during the summer, we can have identified sites where we can provide food to any student between the ages of 1 and 18. And so in essence, what happened is that the federal government allowed states to apply for this, and Iowa did. And then in fact, as a local district, we applied to the state to be able to, in essence, have our summer food program start in March.
Okay.
And so there are some parameters around that. one of which has to have, you know, your school needs to have 50% of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. Well, we don't have any of those schools, but what they allowed to do is that they actually take like a circle and they put it around a, where a school is located. And if that area qualifies, then we can apply for that. And so we have three buildings where we're able to provide free and reduced lunch. And those buildings are at Meeker, Mitchell, and Sawyer Elementary School.
So how does it work? Let's say that I'm a parent and during the normal school year, my child receives free and reduced food at school. Yeah. Yeah. And here we are in COVID. And what do I need to do?
Yeah. So through the summer food program, how students qualify doesn't matter. Any parent and any student could go to one of those three locations and they could pick up breakfast and lunch at any one of those three locations. And so if you live really anywhere in Ames, if you go to one of those locations, you can get breakfast and lunch. And one of the really cool things that we were able to do is, let's say, you know, they're open from 10 to 1 o'clock. If you go at 10 o'clock in the morning, you can grab breakfast for the day and you can grab your lunch for the day and you don't have to return at a specific time again.
So Ross, you've heard some things here from Eric. Do you have any questions? Oh, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good morning, Eric. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Did I see you? Were you part of the group that came down to the Capitol?
I wasn't. No.
Oh, okay. All right. It was good to see some mm-hmm. students from the Ames District. Could you tell us a little bit about the teachers that are traveling around by car to honk at their students? Do you know how that started and what they're doing? Yeah.
You know, it's been actually great. We've shared throughout the last week through our social media channels, you know, just some images of this it's happening in a lot of districts. I can speak for the Ames district in that these were building level decisions. These were teachers who organized this and worked with their administrator and figured out the mapping within their district and coordinated, you know, all the teachers, you know, starting in a parking lot and figuring out where they go. And so, we were standing, my family and I, they came near our house last night and, you know, so we made a big sign and, you know, I walked around a little bit just up and down the street in our neighborhood and saw sidewalk chalk and, you know, finally when the teachers come in their cars, you know, with balloons and they've decorated their car, it's really an amazing thing to watch because you can see from both sides how, you know, the teachers miss the students and the students just want to see their teachers. And it's really a great thing.
I learned of this.
It's fantastic. It's a testament to you all. My assumption is everybody's practicing their social distancing while they,
That's exactly correct. Yeah. I mean, even when I, you know, was walking up and down the street, you know, because I take a lot of pictures and help document this stuff. You know, I'm walking down the middle of the street and, you know, it's not a high traffic neighborhood, but, you know, just seeing some of our neighbors and getting some of those pictures, it's really great. And, you know, it's a testament that, you know, this is our new normal, but we still want to be back in our schools and we will be, you know, someday, but we're ready for that.
Fantastic.
Eric, back to the feeding of children.
Yeah.
So from 10 a.m. to 1, is that the right time?
Yep, that's correct. Yep.
And the three schools are?
Meeker Elementary, Mitchell Elementary, and Sawyer Elementary.
And how's this been going so far?
It's been going really great. So we started last Monday. So last week was our first week. And really, I think we need to give a shout out to our food service staff because they figured this out in under a week on how to be able to mobilize, you know, their people to be able to prepare these meals and then be able to provide them in an efficient manner. And so every day last week, we saw an increase of the number of students and meals that we were providing. And last week we provided just over 4,600 meals to students. And so, and then those numbers stayed consistent for yesterday as well. And so we hope that the more we've talked about it in our daily communication to parents and share some information through our social media channels, we hope those numbers continue to go up and so that the families who really can benefit from it can.
Now, what about families who couldn't make it to those schools? Has that come up at all in the discussion?
So I know that, you know, we have great partners, and not just great partners, but I mean, we have, you see this sense of community. And so I know that there's been, you know, some neighborhoods where, hey, you know, I'll grab some meals today and someone else can tomorrow. So we've had some of that. Additionally, what we've done is we set up a Google form. And so, and one of the things that we wanted to identify is we've been working with our school counselors and what are called our student and family advocates in our schools. And in essence, what they are social workers, and they are people in our building to work with families who may have food challenges. And so we've actually been working with the food bank, and we've been able to get baskets of food to families as well, just through working through, you know, those channels. We have a homeless liaison, so we've been working with her. And so there's this team of people in Ames who has been really identifying families who would benefit from this.
Now, we know that a lot of students, or a fair number of students, have also other kind of needs, mental health, psychosocial needs, etc. How is the school district helping those families cope in these times?
So again, you know, we're moving towards, it's this hybrid of we're moving towards, you know, what could be online education in Ames. And yet we're very aware that, you know, there's huge benefits and power to, you know, being in our buildings, and some of those things get lost. And so we have to go analog sometimes. You know, we're pushing towards going towards online, and you know, I just referenced a Google form. Well, not everyone has access to fill out that Google form. And so we've been seeing, teachers, and other people actually advocating for families. And so that's going to be one of the challenges really moving forward. And I think it's the mental health and just the social interactions with our teachers for all of our students. One of the things that we were talking about yesterday in our director's meeting in the morning is setting up guidance for our teachers on how and when can we reach out to students, you know, just having touch points throughout the week. So we may not be yet to the point where we're providing required online education yet, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be reaching out to our students, because I think, you know, all of our students have a need to be able to want to interact with their teachers and just check in just to see how they're doing. And to be quite honest with you, I think it would probably be good for the mental health of our teachers as well, just to have that interaction throughout the week.
Not to forgive the mental health of the parents who could use a little bit of a break, huh?
I hear you. I mean, I'm trying to work, you know, out of my new kitchen office, and I have, you know, two kids here as well, so.
Sure. So if parents want to learn more about what the school district is doing to help in these times, what's the best resource for them to consult, Eric?
Yeah, so we're actually, this started shortly after we closed, and it actually just happened organically, but we're sending daily communication to our parents and staff. And so we didn't actually have an update yesterday, but that's kind of the outlier. We did every day last week, and virtually the week before, I think we had 4 out of 5 days where we provided a daily update. And so that's going to all of our staff members and email to all of our parents as well. And then additionally, we set up a dedicated page on our website that you can find right on the homepage, where we're actually putting PDFs of all of those daily communications to our staff and parents as well. And a lot of the stuff we're piecing out through social media as well.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. Eric, in closing, do you have any words of wisdom for today?
Words of wisdom today, you know, get outside and, you know, do some yard work or something. I think that's my advice for people today. You know, thank goodness we're heading into spring so that we can do some of that. And, you know, maybe take our mind off of the news a little bit, you know, stay educated, but you can't be watching news all day long.
Well, those are wise words from Eric Smith, Director of Communications, Ames Community Schools. Thank you again, Eric, and we look forward to having you as a guest in the future.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And we are 89.1 FM, Story City Ames, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. You're one of your hosts for today with Ann Kinzel with the Ames Progressive Alliance and Mike Murphy at the controls engineering this program.
Yes, we also have Ross Wilburn joining us today
yes.
as a co-host. And welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Ames's Police Chief Jason Tuttle. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here.
Yes, it's good to be here. So, Chief Tuttle, how are you doing today in the new normal?
I'm good. I think you promoted me, though. I'll get in trouble if Chief shares me taking credit for him. But
no
problem. No, I'm doing well. It's been a crazy couple weeks here at the police department as we plan for some of the COVID protocols. So we'll have to continue to still try to do our job the best we can with our calls for service.
Sure. And Ross, join in if you have any questions. I'll just start out with one. People have talked about the necessity to take home security measures during this outbreak. I'm not sure what that means, but maybe you can help us out.
Yeah, well, I think in some ways it does change a little bit now that more people are home. So before, during some spring break and winter break, some of those things, we would tell people that are leaving town to secure their apartments, don't leave valuables out in plain sight, keep your doors and windows locked, set up your security system if you're going to leave, some of those things. But now people are home more. And so I think really the likelihood of having some of those thefts and things that we'd have before will decrease because some of our criminals are less likely to go in those places. But as usual, I mean, sometimes just using that common sense of not leaving your large sliding glass door open with your computer and your big screen TV sitting next to it. You can do some of those small things by being proactive and taking those measures. We always tell people too, if you have an old broomstick, cut it and put it in the sliding track of your door. That's one way to keep someone from trying to get inside of your apartment or your house. And for your vehicle, make sure that you keep it locked. Make sure you take any valuables out of your vehicle when you leave it. Unfortunately, we would see people where they would leave their purse in their vehicle at a workout center or the mall or some of those things. Again, that's just not a good practice to do. So sometimes just taking those small tidbits of advice and being proactive can prevent further crime from happening. Then what we see, burglaries and thefts are crimes of opportunity. Take your away, that can be helpful.
Do you have any stats on what's happening in local crime since we've kind of gone to home confinement?
Yeah, we've definitely seen a decrease in calls for service here at the department. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but they're down double digits for sure, I would say, in what we're seeing. I think people are staying home and we're seeing less people out in the public. And we've also told our staff, unless you're trying to solve a bigger problem, there's really no need for us to go out and do a bunch of proactive traffic enforcement. And even the jail is telling us that they want us to cite and release more people if we do encounter them. We've had a number of shoplifting cases from some of the stores here in town recently. And so some of those people in the past would potentially be arrested depending on how much product they've stolen from the stores. And so we're citing and releasing most of those people because we don't want to introduce a sick person into our jail at Story County.
I understand that's a huge concern nationwide. Now, what about one of the scourges of our society, domestic violence? Now that we have people in close quarters, has that affected the situation for domestic violence, to your knowledge?
For sure. I'm glad you asked that question. That was on my agenda today. One of the things we really worry about are people who are in abusive situations because now likely that abuser may be home with them and they may not have a way to get out like they would have in the past. That abuser may be keeping them from leaving. And so we really do if you know someone who's in an abusive situation, if you can safely reach out to them and let them know that you're there for them, we want you to do that. But we also, if you are an abused person, we want you to think about creating a safety plan. Think about how you would get out of the house if you need to immediately with your kids. So maybe creating a a small backpack that has some supplies in it. It could be medications. It could be some of those things. And then they could also document some of their abuse. Again, we really, abusers function on power and control. And so when they're home with that person, they're able to control them and exude that power over them in a much more, much more than they would any other time if they, you know, rather than being at work. And so we really do want people to be aware of this. And we also have some, we do have resources here in town that can help. Access, our local advocacy center here in Ames, is still open. They've modified some of their procedures, but if you need to talk with an advocate, you can call them. You can still call law enforcement. We're going to still respond to domestic situations. We can help. We also know that people are just very reluctant at times when they've had that, they've been in that abusive situation for so long, they may be brainwashed into thinking no one's there to help them. We do want them to know we are here to help them, and we'll bring other resources in to try to support them through that situation as well.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I think we're going to, we've talked a little bit about having a segment of our show deal with domestic violence and maybe bring in a guest from Access. So it's good to know that there are resources out there. And if you're in that situation here in Ames, please do call Access or the police department as necessary.
And can I jump with a question?
Absolutely, Ross.
Jason, good to see you.
Morning.
I've been getting, as a legislator, flooded with, different groups trying to sell things related to coronavirus. Is there anything that folks here, if they suspect they're being scammed here in Ames, anything they can do locally here?
Yeah, for sure. If you believe that you've been a victim of a scam, we do want you to call us. Please don't come to our lobby. We've had a lot of people show up when they could be calling. Again, we're trying to follow social distancing rules too, but they can call our non-emergency number, 239-5133, because we do like to keep, even if they're not out money, we can still document that. And so we like to know kind of the current state of scams in our community. One of the things I saw yesterday more nationally was there are some scammers that are trying to pose as persons affiliated with the coronavirus stimulus checks. So we're already starting to see nationally some of those scams come out. And again, I think you'll, like you said, probably cleaning companies, we could see some of that happening. We could see people trying to sell different sanitizers. We've seen people trying to sell toilet paper for inflated prices. And I know the Attorney General's office is wanting to be aware of some of those things as well. So for sure, call us. You can also report some of those things, depending on what the scam is, I think, to the Attorney General's office. But we do like to be informed of what those are so we can spread the word via social media. Generally is our best way to do that.
Thank you.
Do you have any resources on your website that talk about scams or any place that you might direct people that where they could get good information about this?
Yeah, I think we do have some information on our website on scams in general. The Attorney General's website has some information. The Federal Trade Commission generally has some pretty good information on scams as well. And so if you just Google, scams or resources for scams, that's a great way to find some of that information. But I do believe we have a dedicated section on our page for that.
And what was that number?
Yeah.
Officer
Tuck.
What was the
number? 515-239-5133.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things we've discussed with other department folks at the City of Ames is how you're going to maintain staffing as the disease progresses in Iowa. What are your plans for this?
Yeah, we've had a lot of meetings about this. So right now it's somewhat as usual, but we're even taking the steps to where every shift has a briefing for about 15 minutes before the officers go out in the street so they can learn what happened the previous 24 hours when they weren't here. We're doing some different things with that now where we're having social distancing with the officers. We're also wiping down our entire briefing room before and after those briefings. The officers are wiping down the cars. We actually had our cars disinfected by a professional cleaning company yesterday. And so again, we have 10 patrol cars. And so that took us a while to get through all those vehicles. I think that's still happening this morning. But we are also really trying to limit our contact with the public when we can. We're still going to respond to those life safety emergencies. and respond appropriately. But we're encouraging people to call us. We've given all of our officers cell phones in the cars so they can call people so they don't have to have that face-to-face contact if possible. But we're also planning in the future, if one of our officers gets infected, they're likely going to infect an entire shift. And that's bad for us, because if we have to quarantine an entire shift for at least 14 days, that's a third of our department. And so we have some contingency plans to go to 12-hour shifts. We'll split the department in half, put half the officers on 12-hour shifts, shift A, and then another half on shift B, and then we'll try to run our staffing that way. But again, we're seeing it across the country. I know New York PD, Detroit PD have had significant officers test positive for coronavirus, and they're isolating them away from others. And so that's a concern. So right now we're certainly telling our staff to practice those safe hygiene measures, washing their hands. We have masks, goggles, Tyvek suits, and gloves for all of our officers in their cars. So should they respond to someone, they can put on that PPE material if they know they're walking into an environment where there could be a potential exposure. So across the city, we're having those conversations. I know the fire department's having those similar conversations, and in our command staff, they're meeting sometimes multiple times per day to try to determine what that next step will look like for us. And we're also listening to some of those departments across the country who are already 2 or 3 weeks ahead of us to determine what they've done to keep their staff healthy and safe.
So, Pat, you had a question. The power of Zoom allows me to interrupt a bit. Sorry about that. Go for it.
Oh, no problem. The opportunity for Officer Tuttle to share what's current with the scams and that sort of information, I think, is exactly what we're striving for at KHOI by including a state representative and city employees and the public at large. So this is a wonderful forum, but I am encouraging everyone to write down that number, 515-239-5133. That is the best opportunity to check in, it sounds like, with the Ames Police Department. And are there other messages, Officer Tuttle?
Yeah, well, again, I think we've had a few gatherings that we've been to over the past couple weeks. It's actually been pretty good, but we've had a few gatherings where there have been 10 or more people at some of those, and we've gotten some complaints on those, and we've responded and asked people to, you know, to go their own ways. So we would ask people to continue to heed what the governor's asking us to do at this point. I really do think it's important that we come together as a community and that we continue to support each other. We sometimes see some of those people in need, but as people continue to distance themselves, it may be a neighbor that sees someone in need. And so we do have resources here also for people that are suffering through some mental health issues through this, or they may be exhibiting some greater levels of anxiety. We have a mental health advocate here that can help that person get connected with resources. It could be our mobile crisis response team. It could be a local provider. I know some of the providers here in town are now doing more telehealth and video conferencing for some of those meetings where they need to meet with people who are in a crisis. I think the biggest thing is I think people, they're going to continue to become more anxious as this progresses through our community. We do have some resources here that can help them. And we've already seen some of that. We've had some significant domestic violence issues we've seen over the past week. We've had some people calling us. Really unsure what they should be doing. They are just in a state of crisis. And so we can help. And it's just important we know there are resources out there to help people in those situations.
That's exactly the information I was hoping that you would emphasize, that you're on essentially the front lines. And just the etiquette of proper social distancing and reminding and it's a role that you may not have seen coming, but it's certainly appreciated.
So. Susan Guiazda, any last words from you today?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that we sent out news yesterday that our golf course has delayed its opening. So that just came out yesterday. Typically, Homewood Golf Course would open at the 1st of April, but we are going to look at a tentative opening of April 15th. And that, again, will give us more time to develop some guidelines. As we're all saying, the weather is turning nicer and people would like to get outside. It seems there would be ways to safely socially distance yourself while you're golfing, but we want to put some guidelines in place to ensure that that happens. So while we know that people are eager to get out and golf, they're going to have to give us a couple of weeks before that can actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and with Jason Tuttle, Officer with the Ames Police Department. My name's Pat Schlarba. I'm co-hosting Local Talk this morning with Ann Kinzel and Representative Ross Wilburn. And thank you for your service, Officer Tuttle, and thank you so much, Susan Guiazda.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Great day.
Thank you.
Yes. And now let's welcome Ms. Anna Banana for another welcome installment of KHOI's Heart to Heart Messages. Anna, are you with us?
Yes. Greetings, KHOI greetings. Family.
Greetings.
Yep, it is Anna Banana who is giving a tip of the hat to the innovative ways that KHOI is helping our listeners stay connected and our program hosts safe and healthy during these days of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Now, and as I thought about how KHOI is now facilitating communication using Zoom, like today, today's heart-to-heart messages come from a group that I am part of that has depended on FaceTime, Skype, and WhatsApp to stay connected long before COVID-19. So I lived in England for nearly 4 years before moving back home to Iowa in 2018. And when I made that decision to come back to the States, the hardest part was leaving my friends. And when I told them I was moving to Iowa, they didn't have a clue where I was going. And it made me nervous that I would lose these friendships due to distance. Some of them thought I was moving to Idaho. How they knew about Idaho, not Iowa, I don't know.
Yeah.
I went to the Ames. What's that, Pat?
That happens. My mother was from Idaho, and so I grew up most of my life, you know, from, if they didn't say Iowa, where's Pat from, a state that you know no one else living there? And if it wasn't Iowa, they would say Idaho for some reason.
Yes. I think you have to say, no, we're corn and pigs, not potatoes.
Okay. Yeah.
So to remedy that, because again, I didn't want to lose these friendships that are near and dear to me, I went to the Ames History Museum, which is right next door to the KHOI station, and purchased lots of postcards and books about Ames to mail to my friends in England, because it was important to me that we stay connected and they knew a little bit about the place where I now live, work, and play. And every month we get together on a Saturday morning, which for them is 10 a.m., and for me, it is 4 a.m. Yikes. Yeah. And listen, people, it is not pretty. I do prepare by wearing what I want them to see to bed, but I can't do anything about my unkempt, tangled, messy hair and those pillowcase creases that are pressed hard into my face. So, listen, I understand and understood party on the top, PJs on the bottom, long before the coronavirus forced us into the Zoom conference call meetings. I'm just saying, it is not pretty. But even though I look horrible, I wouldn't miss these sessions for anything, because I'm dedicated to staying connected, to remaining friends forever, but this does require effort. So last week, England was issued a stay-at-home order, sending the UK into lockdown to fight the coronavirus pandemic. So when I asked what they thought about this segment idea, heart-to-heart messages, they loved it and sent messages from Aylesbury, England to Ames, Iowa, related to coping with COVID-19. So the first heart-to-heart message comes from the most loveliest of human beings I ever had the honor of knowing, and her name is Claire Steele, and she studied at Oxford to become a writer and writing instructor. And this is what she has posted on her website when I looked at it. I believe we are born to be creative, and that writing connects us to who we really are and what we really value. To be creative is to be in love with life, to love it enough that you want to bring more poetry to it, more magic, more of you. See, how could you not love her? She brings beauty into the world through her words, much like Representative Wilburn does with his clarinet playing. So the music and poetry and words are so magical, and that's how we connect and are inspired by each other. But Claire sent us this heart-to-heart message. Sending love and support across the miles. Our imaginations are boundless, and we must use the enforced isolation to free our imaginative and creative lives and to connect in new, deep, and truthful ways. Our strength comes from each other. We can be truly happy when we are able to serve each other in meaningful ways. Let us use technology to come together in ways we have never before imagined, so that even when we are isolated, we are connected. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, yes.
So thank you so much. Isn't that beautiful? I love that. So thank you, Claire, my beautiful English friend, for sharing this message with us today. And then another friend that is from England in that same group, her name is Lynn, who is a senior administrator at a creative company in London. And I like how she describes her job. I connect with people and get things done with a smile. And if you met Lynn, you would love her. She's got this joyous face, and she just wants people to be happy. And so she's enthusiastic about creating happy customers and happy team members. That's Lynn. Happy, happy, happy. So she sent me the following heart-to-heart message. Hi, Anna. Hope you and your family are keeping well. What a lovely radio spot and station. Here's my message. Sending much love in the UK. If you are able to, try and look on this enforced downtime as a global deep breath, a shift in perspective to protect those more vulnerable. And that's Lynn, keeping everybody happy and safe. I love that girl. And then on that same note, on going on an international theme, Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI station manager, has a Swiss friend who sent a heart-to-heart message, which is the slogan of the Swiss government. And she wrote, we are now living more slowly, but we are living. So today's heart-to-heart messages are as far away as 4,129 miles away from Ames. But they are close to my heart because there are people I love and adore, and individuals who now care about those of us in America, Iowa, and Story County. And as I shared with you, I'm dedicated to staying connected, to making the effort to maintain these relationships that are so near and dear to me. And that is what your community radio station, KHOI, does for you, our dear listeners. KHOI is committed to building community through communication, to staying connected, to making the effort to nurture our relationships that are so important to the KHOI family. You are important to each of us at KHOI. So if you would like to respond to any of these international messages, I invite you to text me, Anna Banana, at 515-809-0077. Or if you have a heart-to-heart message that you would like read on air by me, Anna Banana, I just like saying Anna Banana Pat, text me at 515-809-0077, or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart-to-heart in the subject line, please, which I've already received some, so I'll be reading those in the next couple of days. So we hope that our heart-to-heart messages inspire you to connect to our community, and from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for listening and send our love out to each of you.
Thank you, Anna Banana.
You're welcome.
What a wonderful way to top off a show. Representative Wilburn, any last words?
I would just echo what has been said. Get outside safely. Get some fresh air. My mother used to say, get outside and let some of that sunshine hit you in the face if you're able. And just a final thanks to the folks that are essential employees out there doing their work every day, and folks that you don't necessarily think of.
Yes, a resounding shout out to all the civil servants that are providing us services during these times. We're all learning to adapt.
Since we're giving shout outs, I want to talk about one group in particular.
Oh yes, please, Ann.
And a little disclaimer, I'm the board chair of the Iowa Caregivers, which is the group that advocates for people who work in direct care in nursing homes and hospitals who actually provide care to patients. And as their director, Di Finley, said, how do you bathe, toilet, feed, ambulate someone who's 90 years old from 6 feet away? It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So these folks are taking huge risk working in our nursing homes and care centers. And I just hope everybody gives a thought to them and the people that they serve today.
Yes, thank you, Anna. Special prayer for all of those that are bringing comfort and a link to our human dimension each and every day, each and every moment. This is Local Talk. Airs at 7 a.m. on Tuesdays on KHOI 89.1 FM. These are a part of our special COVID-19 response. And remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. And this is a special Local Talk on the COVID-19 response each Tuesday.
This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Representative Ross Wilburn, and our guest today, Eric Schmidt from the Ames Community School District, and Officer Tuttle and from the Ames Police Department, and Susan Guiazda. And, of course, Anna Magnuson, Anna Banana.
Yeah.
Man, I can't start my day now without Anna Banana. I've been your host, Ann Kinzel, with the Ames Progressive Alliance, with co-host Patch Larbon. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Masterpieces at 9 a.m.
Yeah, and thank you so much, co-host Representative Ross Wilburn. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, keep us in mind. We'll train you, even through the technology of Zoom, and join the Local Talk team.
Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Ross. Thank you, Anna Banana.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Okay.
Take care.